Hi, it's Patrick Cox here with an Accented World in Words podcast.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence.
Okay, Nina, do you know this song?
It was Christmas Eve, babe.
Patrick, you're asking a Jew if she knows a Christmas song. I have no idea. Although I love Christmas carols. It is a big weakness.
And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune.
I'm totally getting back at you for having tested me and Marco.
Happy holidays to you. Seriously.
Got on the lucky one.
So your guess for his nationality based on his accent?
Yeah, he sounds British to me, but it could be Irish. I mean, Irish.
It's Irish. He's called Shane McGowan. Very Irish name. It's a little complicated. His parents were Irish, but he himself was born in Britain, and he was raised partly in Britain, partly in Ireland. He now lives in Ireland, and I think he describes himself as Irish.
He's a halfie.
Yeah, and the band that he fronts is called the Pogues.
Oh, yeah.
Who are often referred to as an Irish group, but a lot of them are actually British, or they're of Irish roots. But they're a sort of Irish immigrant group. And this is the ultimate Irish immigrant song, or the ultimate Irish immigrant Christmas song, Fairy Tale of New York.
You were pretty queen of New York City when the band finished playing. They held up them all. Sinatra was swinging, all the drums we were singing. We kissed on the corner, then danced through the night. The bodies of the NYPD choir were singing, going by. And the bells were ringing out for Christmas Day.
So have you ever been to Ireland?
Nope, never been to Ireland. I've only been to London, is that... That's the only place I've been in the British Isles.
That's like the largest Irish city in the world, isn't it? Or maybe New York is, I don't know.
Or maybe Boston, I wouldn't...
What language do you think they speak in Ireland, mainly?
Well, I think mainly they speak English.
Oh, mainly. How about that?
Really? They don't?
Well, it's true. English is everywhere. And where it isn't, parts of the world where English isn't, people want to learn it, or they want their kids to learn it. Like in South Korea, there are more than 20,000 ESL, English as a Second Language, teachers who are working in South Korea.
20,000.
Some of them are employed in the public school system, and a lot of them teach at these private academies.
Like sort of cram schools for English, that kind
right,
of thing?
Right. Huh. Most of these people, I think nearly all of these teachers are native English speakers. They're from all over the English-speaking world. But when it comes to exactly where they're from in the English-speaking world, there's a huge pecking order.
I'm guessing here that American English is king.
Well, that's what we asked Jason Strother to find out. And he found someone in the South Korean city of Jinju who... She found herself pretty close to the bottom of that pecking order.
I met up with Eve Coffey in a cafe just ahead of her afternoon class. The 23-year-old studied linguistics back home in Ireland and teaches ESL to middle and high school students here now. But she says when she started applying for jobs in South Korea last year through a local recruiter, it didn't go so well.
I don't think he had read my CV or anything, because when he came on to Skype with me, he said, oh, where are you? And I said, oh, I'm in Ireland. And he said, oh, Irish people speak English? And I was like, yes, Irish people speak English.
Coffey says while talking to the man, she tried to speak clearly and not sound too Irish. But that all went out the window when she turned away from the computer and started speaking to her mom in a mix of Irish and her natural brogue.
And he said, you're not an English speaker. And I said, I've obviously displayed that I am an English speaker. And he's like, you said you spoke English. And I said, I do speak English. You can hear me speaking English now. And he said, no, I'm going to blacklist you with all the recruiters. You're never going to get a job in Korea. You don't speak English.
There was no blacklisting, and Coffey quickly found a job through another recruiter.
Can someone tell me...
South Korean law only allows nationals from seven English-speaking countries, including Ireland, South Africa, and Australia, to teach ESL.
What takes its place?
Cool air.
Yes, cool air.
But some teachers who aren't from the U.S. or Canada say schools won't hire instructors with their accents. I've heard that some bosses will even tell non-North Americans to fake an American accent in the classroom. Many South Koreans prefer the American accent over others because of their country's historical and cultural ties with the United States, says Jasper Kim, who lectures at Seoul's Ewha Women's University. He says this preference fulfills an academic objective, too.
Well, I think for many South Koreans, having the American accent means it's the right path. And so the American accent is a ticket to get the children to where they want them to be, which is, in essence, the Ivy Leagues. Anything else just wouldn't make sense to many, but not all Koreans. So that's why there's a preference for the American accent.
Some tutoring schools in Seoul specifically advertise they teach North American English.
What do you want me to say?
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 Attending one of these institutes that employs North American English speakers is 27-year-old Kim Gon-young. He says he plans to do an MBA in the U.S., so that's why he wants to become more familiar with the American accent. I mentioned to him that not all Americans sound the same. He says he knows the difference between American and British English. Like Americans say water, and British people say water. But he says he's not that familiar with all the different regional accents in the U.S. Kevin Kang, director of the Sweet English Language Institute, says the curriculum is based on what some phonetic textbooks refer to as standard American English. Kang, who has a background in speech pathology, says accents really don't matter, despite what some Koreans think. Consistent pronunciation is more important.
It doesn't need to be an American accent or a British accent or an Australian accent. As long as once the learner actually stick to one certain language, actually, that would improve their sound a lot.
He gives me an example of a sound that Koreans just can't get right, the difference between an R and L.
We only have one sound for them, ryu. So, for example, can you guess what I said? Like, did you read it? Did you read it?
Could be read, could be lead.
Yeah, could be read or could be lead.
It's a big problem with the word rice.
Yeah, sure, yeah, it could be lice.
To help students improve their North American accents, Kang School is developing a smartphone app called SoundFit.
The app itself is showing what...
Product manager James Jin walks me through it.
And how they sound and how...
The screen shows a front and side view of an animated mouth.
Like in the word eat is produced by positioning the tongue forward and high in the mouth. The jaw is in...
The app also has a program that compares a student's North American English pronunciation to that of a native speaker.
What do we have, Chongashi?
Jin picks out a student to demonstrate how the classroom version of this feature works. She sounds out the letter E into a microphone. On a screen at the front of the room is an undulating blue wave set against some kind of chart. Jin explains what I'm looking at.
This is basically the shape of your mouth and how your tongue moves. And we make resonating spots or points. And we try to correct the pronunciation of each student.
Then it's my turn.
So you want to give it a go?
I could give it a try, yeah, sure, why not?
You want to try the L?
Sure, I'll give the L a try.
Say the word hall, and then you hold it for a long time. Hall.
Hall.
Exactly. Good. Wow, that's a perfect word. If you would have come to our institute, we'd be like...
Yeah, very nice job there, Jason, pronouncing your L's.
It took me a lot of practice, but thank you, yeah.
So you've been living in Seoul for how many years now?
9 years.
Do you get compliments on your own American English? Do people want you to teach their kids how to speak properly?
You know, on occasion, Patrick, I do get compliments, especially from people who perhaps are not fluent English speakers. I've been told, oh, wow, your English is so good, and I like the sound of your voice. Fortunately, no one has asked me to teach their kids. I mean, there is a certain degree that I'm a Caucasian foreigner here in Korea. People automatically assume that I'm an English teacher, since probably the majority of Western expats here are in the English teaching profession. But once I tell them that that's not my game, they usually leave me alone.
You know, the director of the language school that you spoke to, I was struck by his comment that it doesn't matter what kind of accent you have. I mean, I wonder how many Koreans agree with him and how many would still think that it really matters a lot.
Yeah, I was quite surprised what Mr. Kang said as well. I was expecting, when I arrived at his school, and that's located in the Gangnam district of Seoul, for him to tell me how important it was for his students to speak American English. But his view was much more nuanced, perhaps because he has a background in linguistics.
The Gangnam district of Seoul, is that the same district that...
That is
Gangnam
district,
style,
Patrick.
Right?
Gangnam style all the way. I mean, that is where the most expensive hagwons, these private academies, are located. It's the area of town that all Koreans aspire to live in or work in and study in to an extent. I talked with a lawyer, actually, who works with English teachers in discrimination cases, and he said this doesn't happen so much in Seoul these days, but it's the smaller schools outside of this big cities where there still is this preference, a strong preference, for American-accented English. There's still a belief in these, let's say, less affluent, less populated areas that if you're going to learn English, you better learn it the American way. And it's not only for the sake of learning the language. Koreans, from the time they're in elementary school until they're, you know, well set in their careers, they're being assessed again and again on how well they speak English. And Jasper Kim, who you heard in my piece, a professor at Seoul's Ewha Women's University, he says it can be quite superficial.
English education is not just for practical reasons. It's viewed as a signal that you are from the right family, from the right economic class. If you're able to speak English fairly well, fluently, then that means that your family's had the economic resources to send you to the United States or to send you to England, as opposed to other places. I think it's just the image that conjures up by many South Koreans, especially South Korean mothers, when you think about what is America, what does it represent? And often that's what is found in their living rooms through television and cable and Hollywood, the Brad Pitts, Leonardo DiCaprio's. And so they want an image that fulfills sort of their idea of what it's like to live the American life. And so when there can be someone who teaches at a hagwon, which is trying to fulfill educational but also economic objectives, then hiring someone who looks like that can be probably more beneficial than others who don't look like that.
So when he says look like that or don't look like that, what does he mean? Does he mean look like a white American?
That's exactly what he means, Patrick. For instance, I was talking with one of the teachers at the school that I featured. He's a Korean-American guy. He speaks both Korean and English, but he told me when he first arrived here in Korea a few years back looking for an English teaching job, he was turned down because he didn't look the part. A lot of schools, and again, smaller schools, probably outside of Seoul more likely, their ideal teacher is someone who looks American, and that is a fair-skinned, perhaps light-eyed and light-haired Westerner, and Asian Americans, African Americans, Latino Americans, they don't fit that picture.
And is it okay to say that? Is that how socially acceptable is it to speak quite boldly about race?
It's getting less and less acceptable here. When I first arrived here, I actually did a story about the preference for white English teachers. I remember interviewing an African-American guy from Philadelphia who was told flat out by the school, one of these private hagwons, one of these private institutes outside of Seoul, saying, sorry, we can't hire a black guy. The parents wouldn't feel comfortable having their kids taught by a black person. It still happens, although it's much more on the hush. And I'm teachers that I've spoke to, recruiters who I've spoke to, bosses will give every other excuse in the world for not hiring someone who isn't white. But, you know, when it comes down to it, that's what they're actually looking for.
Hmm. So what about that Irish teacher, Eve Coffey?
Eve.
Yeah, I mean, where does she fit into this? She got hired, as you reported. But I wonder whether other people besides that recruiter who seemed like, I mean, it was extraordinary what he had to say. I mean, how many other people in Korea would believe that she was not an English speaker?
I think that was an amazingly exceptional case. Now, what's funny, Eve told me that that same recruiter went on to hire another Irish girl sometime later for teaching jobs in Jinju, where she lives. And she knows this Irish girl. So he evidently got the picture that Irish people do speak English after all. But right, I think most people here would not be as ignorant as that man was.
It struck me that in listening to her, she doesn't have a particularly strong Irish accent. I wonder, even with that not especially strong accent, whether she's had to tone it down a bit or make any kind of adjustments.
She has, actually. She told me that something that she's learned to do, and I think probably many other teachers who, let's say, aren't... It's not necessarily a reflection of the need to speak North American English, but perhaps more clear English. Eve said that she adopts what she calls a teacher voice, perhaps more enunciated, it's a bit slower, although she said that there are some North American English elements to it. I have an example for you.
Can everyone take out their homework now, please? In Ireland, we'd be that polite, but here I have to say, everyone take out your homework now. So normal Irish speech patterns, it leaves space for like them to say no, but with school children here who have learned American English, which is quite different, it's more upfront.
Okay, some changes, but it strikes me that that's not like a huge change, and it's as much attitudinal as linguistic.
Right, and I think as South Korea has opened up its policies as to who can teach English, and you have more people from Australia, South Africa in particular, or Ireland coming here to teach, I think more and more families are, you know, realize that there's much more to English than just a North American accent. There is change happening, and it's going to take a while for that to reach the whole nation. But English accents will be treated equally someday, Patrick.
Yeah. I wonder if it works the other way. What about when you learned Korean? Is there a standard Korean that, you know, it's considered better to speak, and other versions of Korean that are maybe less desirable?
Absolutely, Patrick. When I first studied Korean back in 2002 at Yonsei University here in Seoul, they teach a very standard Seoul dialect. And I think all the language institutes around the country teach standard Seoul dialect. Almost every province in Korea has not only a different accent, but they have different words. They have some even different grammatical structures. A person who grew up in Seoul would not be able to really understand someone from, let's say, South Jeolla province, you know, which is only a 3-hour ride away on the express train. It seems like almost a completely different language. And then you have Jeju Island, a little more than an hour flight south of Seoul. That's a really different dialect that I find it hard to understand how that even constitutes as Korean.
Yeah, right. And of course, I mean, you didn't mention it, but you've reported on in the past North Koreans coming to South Korea, and that being a huge problem, not just standing out because of their dialect, but because of a lack of certain basic words.
Absolutely. I mean, the two languages have gone in somewhat different ways. South Korea has acquired many foreign words, specifically from English, whereas North Korean, you know, they borrowed Chinese words, they borrowed Russian words. They also just don't have the same, let's say, technology as South Korea has. They don't have words for some items or some notions. So, right, being a North Korean defector here in the South has many problems, but the fact that their accents make them seem or sound like country bumpkins and they don't even understand what their South Korean classmates and colleagues are saying just makes it even more difficult for them to adjust to life here.
Jason Strother, he lives in Seoul. And, well, I got thinking about the snobbishness of accents beyond the situation in Korea. And really, it's all over the place. It may be a little more pronounced in Korea, but it exists elsewhere, like Spanish learning here in the United States. Yes, there are plenty of Spanish teachers from Latin America, but there's considerable cachet in learning Castilian Spanish. Or in Canada, where it's the done thing in certain circles to send your English-speaking kids to learn French in France rather than just down the road in Quebec, where they speak a different kind of French. So, Korean friends, it's not just you guys. Well, that's the podcast for today. Our home base is pri.org/language. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter at LingoPod. And please consider leaving us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Those reviews, they really make a difference. Plus, we like the feedback. We really do. And one more thing, at the top of the podcast, there was that announcement about our funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities. This is the start of our second year of funding from NEH, for which we're incredibly grateful. It allows us to do a whole bunch of things that otherwise we couldn't do. But here's a question. Did you recognize the accent of the person who made that NEH announcement at the top of the podcast? It's coming up again in a few seconds, so give it another listen. Let us know on Facebook or Twitter or however you want to contact us if you can place the accent. We'll reveal all in the next podcast, and we'll get someone with a different accent to read the funder next time. Thanks for listening, and here it is again this week.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.